The Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
You can put it on the board!
Woo!
Swing, Brandon Moore chat, whatever you want to call it. Obviously tonight did not go as well as last night. 14-3 loss, 8 runs in the 8th inning for the Texas Rangers. But if you guys want to break down the game tonight, we can do that. We can talk about pretty much anything you want, because obviously the game tonight did not go very well. I apologize for looking kind of shabby with my cap on today. It was not a good hair day for yours truly, but we'll have some fun with it, and we can chit-chat about tonight's game, whatever you want, if you guys want to talk about whatever. Twins off tomorrow before heading to Kansas City. Did take 2 out of 3 from the Rangers, so obviously still a very good series. They got the Rangers at a time when they weren't hitting. Tonight, that kind of got turned around, but I don't know. I think it was a positive series overall. Looking at Kansas City coming up, got Kyle Gibson confirmed starting on Friday. Excuse me, on Saturday, Phil Hughes against Jason Hamill. And then on Sunday, Irvin Santana, the undisputed staff ace, will take on Jason Vargas, who's been off to a really nice start so far for the Royals. So pretty good 3-game matchup, you know, for the Twins and Royals. Not necessarily great, but not too bad. Looks like Hector Santiago is going to go on the bereavement list after the passing of his grandmother. So the Twins will be able to maneuver the roster a little bit. I do think it's going to be Buddy Beauchere's coming up. And, you know, just give them a little more length for 3 days while the team continues to move through this road trip before coming back home for six at home next week. Ryan Sawyer wants to know other bullpen thoughts, changes needed. I don't know how long they're going to go on before they designate Michael Tonkin for assignment, and I say that, I don't know, I wouldn't say with a tinge of sadness, but I do like Michael Tonkin as a guy. I just don't think they can keep going to him. He just doesn't have it, and they can't give him a role where he's going to be successful. After tonight, Matt Belisle's ERA 7.00. After tonight, Michael Tonkin's ERA 7.36. Obviously, Belisle has much more potential. He's got a longer leash as far as how long they're going to let him go. But I just thought that with Tonkin, I just don't see a way where they can keep going with him out there. Well, Twin Vikings said, once optioned, I thought you had to stay down for 10 days. I did ask Mike Berardino that today, and he confirmed with Paul Molitor that if you are brought up for bereavement leave, the 10-day issue is waived. Similarly, it is waived for disabled list stints. Now, I'm not saying there's going to be a disabled list stint or anything like that, but that's one of the other ways that a 10-day period can be waived, is if the player gets put on the bereavement list or the disabled list. So with that happening, I do suspect it will be Beauchere's. I just don't think they're not going to need a starter. They're not going to need a high-end reliever. They could go and get Mason Mlotakis, who's been really, really pitching well for Double-A Chattanooga so far this year. He's on the 40-man roster as well. But I just don't think that's in the cards right now. Other than that, you know, most of the other guys are pretty low on the totem pole or pretty high on the totem pole. I never know if it should be low or high, because the bottom of the totem pole is the most important thing. But anyway, they're not going to go get Randy Rosario. They're not going to go get Fernando Romero. They're not going to go get any of those guys or Felix Jorge, the guys that are, you know, in high A ball. You know, they're obviously not coming up. So there was some talk about going and getting a bat, whether it would be Mitch Garver, Daniel Palka. I think that those were the two that came up most prominently this afternoon when the media guys got to talk to Paul Molitor at Globe Life Field. So we'll see what happens. I suspect Buddy Beauchere will meet the Twins on Friday in Kansas City. But if it's a hitter, there's nothing wrong with that either. It would be fun to see Daniel Palka, but I just don't know how much he's going to play with, obviously, you know, needing to find playing time for Robbie Grossman with how he's swinging right now, and Kenny Vargas, who's up. And I just think it doesn't make sense to bring up Palka. I don't even know that it makes sense to bring up Garver either. You know, Castro and Jimenez are doing a fine job. You know, they're not killing the baseball or anything like that, but they're doing okay. I just don't think Garver makes sense to bring up. But so I think we'll see Bo Scheers join the Twins on Friday in Kansas City, but we'll see what happens as far as an official move. Once I know, I will make sure that you all on Twitter know as well. Other than that, we can talk about pretty much whatever people want to talk about. Only multi-hit game tonight for the Twins was Miguel Sano going 3-for-4. Continues to mash, hitting .286, slugging .600, OPS over 1,000. He's just been unbelievable, and I don't think you can say enough about how Sano has looked so far this year. Buxton, Ryan Sawyer says Buxton getting on base a ton. I actually made a challenge trade in my Auto New Fantasy League tonight. $14 Byron Buxton coming my way. I traded a $5 Jose Barrio. So I think that's going to be a good move for me. Jimmy Dosen says lock up Sano for a few extra years or 10. Yeah, I would definitely think about going for a long extension with Miguel Sano. I just think he's going to be a fantastic player, and I hope that they keep him in Minnesota for a very, very long time. BPerm3 wants to know, when is Danny Santana going to be designated for assignment? Probably when A-Ray Adrianza comes back, which is probably not that far away. I suspect that might be the homestand that starts next Tuesday. They got 3 in Kansas City, and then off for Monday, and then they're Tuesday through Sunday. They'll be back at Target Field. I don't have the schedule in front of me to remember who exactly they're playing. I got a lot going on in my personal life with the baby coming soon, so we've been thinking about that a lot. But I'm planning on covering probably 3 of those games, assuming things don't start moving quickly with Harper here. So we'll see what happens. But not a great offensive effort for the Twins tonight. Only 2 strikeouts with Cole Hamels on the mound. That's impressive. 4 walks. Again, you know, the Twins doing what they do. A little surprising, the Twins pitching staff had 9 strikeouts, 8 walks, but obviously that's not going to cut it. Hector Santiago looking a little bit more like the Hector Santiago we've seen, you know, effectively wild, 104 pitches in 5 innings. Obviously a lot on his mind, and hopefully he can go out, take care of business with his family and come back and move forward. But, you know, we're obviously thinking about Hector at this tough time with his grandma passing away. And we'll see what happens. Taylor Rogers obviously had a rough 6th inning, hitting Joey Gallo and then only getting 1 out, 3 earned runs coming across. Not what you expect when you bring in your lefty situational guy to face the likes of Gallo and Shin-Soo Chu. And then the shield gets flipped around to the right side. You know, that's not going to work. But kind of easy to forget about that now that that the 8th inning happened the way it did with 8 runs off Belisle and Tonkin. Certainly didn't see that coming, and Belisle just did not have it tonight. 27 pitches, 18 strikes, but just got peppered all over the place. So, yeah, it was a tough night. I think Jeremy Jeffress looked great. Keone Kalo looked pretty good for the Rangers as well. And you know, you're gonna lay an egg every now and then, so I don't think it's really that big of a deal. Oh man, Luke Inman, one of my colleagues in Zone Coverage, just pulled the ASL, age, sex, location. It's like we're on AOL from back in the day. Obviously, Mr. Inman grew up in the late '90s on AOL and MSN Instant Messenger, like we all did. So that one always makes me laugh because I remember being on Yahoo and AIM and MSN for all those late nights back in junior high, which was a long time ago. I won't tell you how long ago, but I think I kind of gave you a pretty good hint. So, we can talk about takes from tonight's game. Do we ever see John Ryan Murphy again? Jimmy wants to know. I don't know. As far as John Ryan Murphy, I'm not sure if we will see him again. I think that it's going to be difficult for him to make his way back. I think they really like Chris Jimenez as a starter, or as a backup, excuse me. Castro, obviously, signed to be a starter. He's going to make the, I wouldn't say the big bucks, but $7, $8 million per year is pretty good money for a starting catcher. So I don't know what the plan is with Murphy. I think the best case scenario would be for him to hit down at AAA, and maybe they can flip him, you know, for a change of scenery candidate, which was basically what the Aaron Hicks deal was in the first place. But anyway, I don't think it's going to be a situation where they can get much in the way of value. I did see Luke ask about previous first round picks. Obviously, Luke, as an NFL draft guy, has some interest. Nick Gordon, who you mentioned, is killing it at AA. He might make his big league debut at some time this year. I think it's pretty unlikely, but at some point here, probably within the next calendar year, you'll see Nick Gordon up here. That might hinge on how long Brian Dozier's here, and then, you know, we'll see if Gordon plays short or second. I have been teasing and promising an article about Nick Gordon and Jorge Polanco and who will play where if those two are the middle infield of the future, but I'm not sure. I plan to still write it. I just haven't gotten around to it. But I do think that Jorge Polanco has put himself on the radar as the future shortstop for this team based on how he's played in the field this year. Obviously, at the plate, he's been fairly competent. Obviously, a quiet night tonight at the plate, 0-for-4, batting second. But I've been really impressed with Jorge Polanco, perhaps even more so than Miguel Sano. And so, Luke wants to know the best pitcher that's next to come up in our farm system to keep an eye on. Probably Steven Gonsalves, lefty with pretty good stuff that could reach AAA before too long. Been on the shelf with some shoulder stuff to start the season, and I think he's going to miss. I'm not sure how much longer he's going to miss. Probably a little while yet, but I think he's supposed to be coming back sometime in May. Fernando Romero has been treading water a little bit at Chattanooga, but I think he's a big part of the future as well. Right-handed pitcher, already had the arm surgery, but has looked fairly good, in previous years, and is the kind of guy they can really dream on as a future, I don't know about ace, but definitely number two starter. Somebody just asked if this is a make-or-break start for Kyle Gibson. I mean, I think it's very important, but at the same time, too, it'd be more make-or-break if Adalberto Mejia was still up here pitching well, because I do think they're going to go to Barrios at some point in early May. And beyond that, they don't really have a ton of options to go to in the near future. And so to that end, a guy like Gibson probably hangs around longer than you might expect. Same thing goes for, you know, if Phil Hughes starts to struggle based on money, based on the fact that they don't have a ton of big league guys close to helping them. I mean, maybe they give a guy like Jason Wheeler a look. Maybe Nick Tepish, who's up in the bullpen right now, not throwing in the bullpen at this second, but I mean up and stretched out. They could give him a look as well. But I just don't think that Nick Tepish gives you anything that Kyle Gibson doesn't. So I don't know. I think it's a big start, but I'm not going to say it's potential send him to the bullpen start. I wouldn't rule it out, but the fact that they didn't use Tepish late tells me they'd maybe prefer to keep him lengthened out. So we'll see what happens. I love Duffy in the pen, Jimmy says. Think his stuff plays better. Seems like a great fit. Your thoughts? Yeah, I do think the two-pitch mix with fastball, which has popped a little better, I think, out of the bullpen, 92, 93, maybe as high as 94 with the curveball, is a good mix in the bullpen. You know, you don't have that changeup that much, and I think it's been a good mix for Duffy. Now, tonight wasn't perfect, but you're still looking at a guy with a 1.59 ERA, plenty of strikeouts, looking fairly good. It would not stun me if on June 1st, Tyler Duffy was one of their top setup guys, especially if Ryan Pressly continues to struggle, but also just due to sheer how well he pitches. You know, Belial is going to need some time to bring his ERA down from this. Now, that doesn't mean that will affect how well he pitches in the next month, but statistically, he's going to look like he's struggled for a very long time. So it'll be interesting to see if Duffy ascends up the ranks quickly, because I think they wanted to keep him lengthened out because of the uncertainty around Justin Haley and what he would provide them. Another J.R. Graham type situation. In fact, when he hit Jacoby Jones against the Tigers on Saturday, it almost felt like when Graham hit Alex Rios, I guess, at Target Field in 2015, where, you know, just a young kid thrown into the fire, feels terrible about hitting somebody, but it just happens. And so, actually, I did tweet something that I thought was interesting. Maybe you guys will disagree, but it was pretty clear, and Thad Levine said it on his Sunday show, that Haley had gotten hurt in his previous outing against Cleveland, and his velocity was down in the high 80s, low 90s. Mm-hmm. So it was interesting to see him come out of that game and ending up getting put on the disabled list. But it was very clear that with his velocity down, that his struggles with keeping his fastball above 90 could be attributed to the biceps issue that he was hoping to work through. So with him on the shelf, you know, they're going to have to patch it together a little bit in terms of long relievers. And I think maybe, too, that's part of why Tepish didn't work tonight in a short outing, was they just don't know what they're going to get from Kyle Gibson on Friday in Kansas City, and if Tepish needs to throw 80 or 90 pitches in 5 innings, you know, we'll see what happens. Ryan Sawyer says, would it be in any way possible to trade Gibson in the next few months? I just don't see it. I think you move him to the bullpen and try to figure something out, and then at the end of the year, if he still stinks, you just non-tender him. Nobody's going to want Gibson based on how he's pitched. You've got more equity in him than someone's going to give you. You know, you're not going to open up a roster spot to bring up someone like Jason Wheeler, Nick Turley, who's pitching really well at Chattanooga. So, I mean, as much as fans would like him gone, I don't think it's going to be a situation where that happens. Bperm3 wants to know, is Sano going to win his appeal? Is a decision coming soon? I don't know. I mean, tomorrow's off day makes sense to have a decision come down, but I don't have any inside information on that right now. I don't think he should be suspended on the basis of, I don't know that his role was any more egregious than Matt Boyd's or James McCann's. And I think that's kind of foolish that, and I think McCann had no punishment whatsoever, and Boyd had a fine, and then Sano had a one-game suspension. I mean, if they want Sano to pay a fine, I think that makes sense. But I just don't think that that's very well-dictated discipline from the commissioner's office to have Sano be suspended and nobody else. Because I don't think the expectation that Sano wouldn't react that way after being thrown at is preposterous. So intent matters, and that's why I think you have to, you know, even the playing field as far as Boyd and Sano are concerned, punishment-wise. So that's why I'm not a big fan of how it was initially handed out, and I'm not sure if that's something that the commissioner's office is going to agree with, and if the appeals process is going to bear out. But I do think that that's how it should end up. Again, it's easy for me to say. It's not my money. It's not my 50 grand he'll end up paying to, you know, cutting a check to the Joe Torre fund or anything like that. But it sure beats missing a game check or a pay for one big league day, which I guess, I mean, for a big leaguer like Sano, it's about $3,000 per game. So, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how much the fine was. $50,000 just off the top of my head. I'm sure it's probably not that much, because that's a lot more than, that's like 10% of his earnings. It won't be that, but we'll see what happens. Has Grossman ever played first? Would be a great platoon with Maurer. I don't think he has played first. In fact, before playing right field the last few games, he had never played right field at all in the Twins organization. He'd played some right and some center field with the Astros beforehand. And then he actually, I believe, Grossman was playing center at Columbus when he asked for his release from the Indians last spring, which blows my mind that he was playing center field anywhere. He's just better suited for a corner. But, yeah, I don't know. He seems too small to be played first base for me. I think it would make sense, but I think, you know, when you talk about perfect platoons for Maurer, Vargas mashed lefties last year too. Now, I don't know if that's a short sample noise or if that's something he's going to do regularly, but if you want a platoon partner for Maurer, you got Kenny Vargas and you've got Byung-ho Park once the hamstring injury comes up, where those guys will kind of, you know, fill in there. Is Grossman a patch type player or a long term future with the Twins? B-Perm wants to know. I like Robbie quite a bit. In fact, seems to be really smart at the plate. I do think he's more of a patch guy, though. With all the talent they have in the outfield as far as starters, future DH potential in Vargas, in Sano, hopefully not, but we'll see. Palka, all those guys, I just think that, you know, Grossman is probably Mr. Right now as opposed to Mr. Right, whether it's a DH left field or whatever. And if they end up adding a free agent at some point, because they're going to have the money to do that as well, that might knock him further down the list too. So I don't think Grossman is long for the Twin Cities. But as long as he's cheap, I don't think he's arbitration eligible until after this season. It makes a lot of sense to just hang with him and just let it roll. Especially now, you look at him, he's hitting .286, .437 on base, .411 slugging. You know, he's not pounding the crap out of the ball, but he's doing well enough to hold down. I mean, I don't know about him hitting cleanup, but he's done enough to justify his roster spot at least, which was funny. There were some people on Twitter saying, why is Robbie Grossman on this team before the season? I was like, how can you raise that kind of a grievance? It was like, if you watched it all last year, you saw he gave them some of the best plate appearances at all last year. And if you didn't watch to see that happen, why do you have opinions on the roster in the first place? So people get angry and make these bold pronouncements I just never really understand. Kind of like the guy on Twitter tonight that was wondering why Joe Maurer wasn't in the lineup because he makes $22 million. Well, he makes $23 million, doesn't hit lefties, and isn't playing well. Why do you want him in the lineup if he stinks right now? So you just can't. There's just no logic as far as what people want from Joe Maurer in terms of consistency. Do they want him to play? Do they want him to play better? I mean, obviously they want him to play better, but Jimmy says, do you think Maurer will retire after 2018? I think my gut reaction would be that he'll have to think about it. I mean, it just, by that point, you'd be looking at five straight subpar seasons, the likelihood of five straight subpar seasons. I think you sign him to a legacy deal and just say, look, you've got a job in the front office for as long as you want, an office at Target Field. Make him the fourth amigo with Kadire and Hunter and Hawkins. But yeah, I just don't know, and I agree with you. I don't know if I see them bringing him back as a player. It's all going to depend on where the roster is in a year. And the other crazy thing is they have like $20 million committed to the 2019 budget right now. And I believe it's like Phil Hughes and then some arbitration eligible or pre-arb guys. And Phil Hughes is due like $13.2 million. But Dozier's off the ledger. Santana's off the ledger. Maurer's off the ledger. And then it's just young guys. And so that's a free agent period where I think David Price is eligible for free agency. Bryce Harper, Manny Machado. Pretty much every, or any position you might want a great player at, you could probably find one. By that time, you get the sense that Falvey and Levine would have a pretty good idea of what they want or what they need. I'm not saying that they'll go get a Bryce Harper and pay $500 million or something like that. But it would be kind of cool to see, you know, what a targeted free agent would look like for this brain trust. Because I don't think Jason Castro at $24 million is the biggest splash they're ever going to make. I do think a middle-tier payroll team like the Twins should be more focused on keeping their guys in-house. You know, making sure that Miguel Sano is a Minnesota Twin for as long as he's capable. Same thing for Myron Buxton, Jorge Polanco, Dozier, if they want to bring him back after this next deal. I don't think they will, but that's how I view middle-tier teams, is less about going out and getting guys, more about keeping the guys you develop. And I think they'll be able to do all that based on the Maurer contract coming off. And I mean, I don't think the Maurer contract has impeded them that much, but I don't know. Will Sano move to first in 2019, similar to Miguel Cabrera, or does it depend on who they draft? They're going to have him play third base for as long as he's physically able, because you don't slide down the defensive spectrum until you absolutely have to. And I know there's probably some alternate takes out there, but I've been impressed with his defensive effort. Even the plays that he's made that have not looked quite that pretty, his physical ability has stood out as very, very, very capable. And I do think that a big part of it is the focus he has. Obviously, hitting almost 290 right now, it's a self-feeding system where it follows him out into the field. When he does well in the field, comes back with him at the plate. And you get that vicious cycle in the good sense, in that, you know, when Miguel Sano is fully locked on, you can't get him out. And he jumped all over that first pitch from Jeffers tonight and just paced it into right center field. I mean, how many guys have that kind of an approach with that kind of power? Any feeling on whether the new regime will be more aggressive on going over the international signing cap? Jimmy wants to know. I have no idea. I literally have no idea, but I know that they are looking at Luis Robert. In fact, I heard Thad Levine say that on Sunday. That's obviously the big prospect that's on the lists now. I believe Cuba, but I'm never good at remembering all that stuff. So I know that they're in on him. I don't know to what extent or how serious, but I do know that they're interested in him, which would be a big get for any organization, not the least of which the Twins, who haven't had a huge signing since Miguel Sano. I mean, Wander Javier is pretty big. I haven't really checked up on him lately, the shortstop that's been in the low levels, but Wander Javier was a big deal too. Just not as big a deal as Sano, I don't think, but more money, just different scenario. So I think they're going to be aggressive relative to what we've grown accustomed to in this market, which I think between all of us is it's not necessarily saying much. I think we all knew Terry Ryan was fairly conservative with that sort of thing. And I wouldn't say I begrudged him for it. It was just you kind of grow accustomed to the way things work. And so part of it is that I wonder if I almost want to ask Terry, like, would you have been interested in Jason Castro? And I've seen Terry at Target Field like 3 or 4 times this year. Would you have been interested in Jason Castro as your catcher, or who would you have targeted? And I know he probably wouldn't tell me anything because he's still working for the Phillies and he's got to keep his cards close to the vest. I wonder if it would have been, you know, totally different, you know, Wellington Castillo, for instance, or something like that. So, I don't know. It's just something I wish that I knew the answer to, and I never will, which is fine. All right, we're at 28 minutes, so 2-minute warning here. Let's get the last few questions in if you guys have some. Otherwise, we'll call it a night. Obviously, thanks for everybody who's been hanging. Had some pretty good numbers on these and pretty good reaction. I'm going to try to pull the audio from the YouTube clip, make it a YouTube or MP3, and then put it up as a podcast as well so that people can listen on Libsyn, Stitcher, Google Play, and iTunes as well. Cold Omaha, zonecoverage.com/Amazon. Make sure and check that out if you shop at Amazon. It's our affiliate program. We get paid if you shop at Amazon. It's very easy, doesn't cost you any more money. So give that a look. Got all kinds of crazy draft coverage going on. Our guy Arif Hassan, tomorrow morning we'll have a mock draft going up. He's been getting crazy page views on this stuff. You guys have been doing an awesome job checking out everything that he's written. I think the top 10 things read at Zone Coverage in the last 3 days, like 9 of them belong to Arif. So he's done a fantastic job. And you guys have done a fantastic job of supporting us. I'll close with this. The ESPN stuff today was obviously very difficult to stomach. And my honest plea to you is this. If you have people in media you like, and I don't care if it's me or if it's somebody else, support them however you're able. I'm never going to want to spend other people's money or tell them how to spend their money. If you have the means and you like what people do and they're behind a paywall at ESPN Insider, support that. If you like someone's writing, don't just see it. Give them a click, read their stuff, engage in their stuff. Or the easiest thing you can do is if you read something, tell someone you liked it. You might think that it's going in one ear and out the other, but I cannot emphasize enough how nice it is to hear that you liked our articles, you like our work, especially if you're specific. If you just kind of do it generally, it's still very nice, but specifics are nice. So thank you to everyone who has supported Zone Coverage, who's supported everything I've done. I hate to see these people losing their jobs, but I know a lot of them will be better for it when they land on their feet and hopefully can find somewhere that will appreciate their talents a little bit more. With that said, that's all I've got for you tonight. Let's enjoy tomorrow's off day. I'm going to have a podcast with Chris Blessing of Baseball HQ. He's been scouting the Chattanooga Lookouts, so we'll have some fun stuff on Nick Gordon, some fun stuff on his memories of Jorge Polanco. He is really interested in Nick Turley, a lefty, a 27-year-old lefty who's been just dealing for the Lookouts. And we'll talk a little bit more about minor league stuff, and we'll see whatever else tickles our fancy. So look for that tomorrow afternoon. This has been the Midwest Swing Podcast, the Midwest Swing Periscope. I'm Brandon Warren. Thanks for joining us.